Welcome to the SaaS Sales Performance Podcast, the show for anyone wanting to be on the cutting edge of SaaS tech sales. We provide the tools you need to take advantage of the rapidly changing sales environment. We bring you the leading experts on the front lines of SaaS sales and distill down our famous masterclasses into bite-sized practical tips. Your hosts will be Ash Ali and Matt Milligan. And on this podcast, we will be transforming your ability to sell more and smash your targets.
Welcome to another episode of the SaaS Sales Performance Podcast. And for today's episode, we're going to be running a slightly different format to the usual guests on the show. We are recording this in mid-2023, end of June 2023. And for the last 6 to 9 months, we've heard tons of insights from revenue leaders, from reps, about the increase in involvement. And one of the things that's quite often discussed in this show is it's a little bit of a black box when it comes to understanding the role of the CFO and the purchase decision, understanding how to build relationships with the CFO, understanding how to get the CFO involved in the sales process. And today's episode is going to be dedicated to helping us understand and answer many of these questions. Today's guest is a super experienced CFO, is someone who has led organizations in a number of different sectors. Today's guest is none other than Sam Sipple. Sam is currently the Chief Financial Officer at Service Power. Sam is joining us on today's show from Laguna Beach, Southern California. Sam, welcome to the SaaS Sales Performance Podcast.
Thanks, Matt. Great to be here.
Awesome. Sam, really excited for today's episode. And as I mentioned at the top of the show, you know, a slightly different format to what we used to on the show. And I think it's going to be really enlightening for many of our community around the world to dive into some of the ways in which they can improve and enhance their sales skill set when it comes to working with CFOs. Before we do that, you know, I'd love to just jump into your journey so far. I mean, if you can help our listener base get a sense for how you came into the world of finance and how you've gone into lead teams through your role in CFO.
Sure. So I'm a CPA by trade, started my career in a pretty traditional sense in terms of working in public accounting. So spent about 5 years in public accounting, the last four of which were providing buy-side due diligence for private equity groups. So was exposed to and had a lot of experience working with private equity groups on leveraged buyout transactions. I was fortunate enough to get an opportunity to join one of my clients, a private equity firm with about $200 million under management. I did that for about 5 years, traditional investor, with a lot of focus on portfolio company oversight and management, working with largely the CFOs of our portfolio companies, given my background. I did that for about 5 years and frankly, kind of got burnt out on the private equity model. It is very long days, long weeks, a ton of effort. And frankly, you know, through that experience, having been exposed to the CFOs of our portfolio companies, I kind of took a step back and one, was interested in having that position and kind of to play in the game, so to speak. Private equity oftentimes feels like you're keeping score and not necessarily playing in the game. And so you kind of went into the market looking specifically for a CFO opportunity and was fortunate enough to land a role with an organization, enterprise software company named Mirth Corporation, which was my first CFO role. Ran that for about a year and a half, had a very successful exit. And from there, you know, have been the CFO of several other enterprise software companies. And as you mentioned, most recently with Service Power.
Awesome. And Sam, some amazing experiences there, I guess, on both sides of the table. Really looking forward to diving into some of the themes on today's show. I guess before we do that, you know, many of our listeners work in sales and they spent most of their entire careers in sales. So, you know, they potentially, unless they've moved into sales leadership role and are working really closely on their forecast, they may not have had much, if any, interaction with the CFO in their own organizations. Just help us understand, for starters, you know, help us unpack the role of a CFO. And what is a kind of typical day in the life of a CFO look like for you?
Yeah. And frankly, it's varied based on the size of the company that I've been at. So I've been with companies that were closer to a startup, so to speak, where the investments in finance and accounting and that side of the house were constrained. So I've been in organizations where as a CFO, I may have had one other individual that I was working with. So had a heavier lift in terms of the day-to-day financial and accounting operations, all the way to kind of where I am today with Service Power, which is a larger organization and one that has more resources. So I've been able to, you know, build out a larger group, having a controller both in the US and in Europe, and a small team under each of them, which allows me to be more involved in other parts of the organization and really become that more strategic CFO that you hear a lot about. And that gives me the opportunity to work more closely with our sales team. And I think a big part of that is providing insights to that sales team so that they understand that the decisions they're making or the direction that they're getting from the CFO office, understanding why that is. And so a lot of that is metric driven, right? A strategic CFO, one of the things that they do is they align their financial goals with business objectives, right? And part of that is understanding what our financial objectives are and allowing the sales team to understand those financial objectives so they have a good understanding of the direction that I'm providing in terms of what a structure of a deal looks like, what the commercial terms are, that sort of thing, how that impacts the organization, how that aligns with our financial objectives, and also shareholder value, right? I'm an enterprise software. Shareholder value is largely driven by revenue growth and the type of revenue. So if a sales team is off kind of on their own without an understanding of what your financial objectives are, what drives enterprise value, there may not be the types of transactions or structures of transactions that maximize that value. So I think by aligning the financial objectives with the business objectives and providing that visibility to the sales team, they have a better understanding of the why. And if they have that understanding, then they can be aligned with you versus just, you know, kind of working in a black hole, not having that understanding, which could create some friction in a sales cycle. But I think if they understand that and understand where the CFO is coming from and how it creates value, having that alignment will have better outcomes for everybody.
Really interesting insight that you share there, Sam. And I hear this a lot, right? I hear this a lot from sellers that they're working with a champion internally on the customer side, working on the deal. Things are moving pretty well. They're putting a proposal, a business case together with that champion. And then, you know, quite often what we've heard, particularly in the last 6 months, is that process kind of reaches the CFO and then things can quite quickly stop. You mentioned there about the importance of getting that alignment between business objectives and financial objectives. I mean, help us understand, you know, in that scenario I just talked through there, is that when that misalignment happens, is that quite a common cause or what else is happening there?
Yeah, I mean, I think from a buyer's perspective, that can definitely happen. And I think it's, you know, certainly important for us as the seller to ensure that we're providing the information that includes the financial benefits associated with purchasing our product. Because like you said, at the end of the day, generally speaking, the CFO or somebody in the finance organization is going to have to approve that spend. And that spend needs to have ROI. And so what we do as a seller is we try to get in front of that as soon as possible to ensure that when it does hit the CFO's desk, that we built the business case to support an ROI so that although there may be spend, that spend is going to create value and ultimately either cost savings or help drive efficiencies and improve the revenue and ultimately the contribution margin from their organization. So I think a lot of times what happens is, you know, some organizations have silos and oftentimes there isn't good collaboration or cross-functional collaboration with the finance organization. And so frankly, it's something that we understand and try to get in front of as soon as possible because, you know, the last thing you want to do is spend a lot of time on a sales cycle and end up in the situation where it gets to the CFO's desk and they nix the deal because they either don't understand what the financial benefit is or the seller hasn't provided that information so that we can support, you know, the business case and ultimately align with finance.
It's kind of the $1 million question for many sellers right now, you know, is how to overcome that scenario from happening. And you talked there about, you know, quite often a lack of cross-functional collaboration. In the sales community, we talk a lot about the need to multi-thread and build multiple champions across your client organization to help really, you know, bring the business case together. It sounds like that's a really important part in kind of getting that cross-functional collaboration working within the customer's organization.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, one of the things that we do is we kind of build out the organization. You know, you mentioned multi-threaded. It's obviously a significant problem if you're single-threaded, and it's a big red flag if you're unable to get access to other individuals within the organization. So, you know, one of the things that we do on every Monday call when we have our sales review is all of the reps have to basically present, here's the organization, here's all of the decision makers or individuals that are going to be part and parcel to ultimately making this decision, to one, ensure that we're not single-threaded, and to two, identify anybody that potentially could be either a blocker or somebody that we didn't make sure that we get in front of or ensure that we're providing the information so that that individual, in terms of their stakes in the buying cycle and the decision making, that they have that information that's needed in order to, you know, ultimately be supportive of the opportunity. So yeah, single threaded, huge red flag, especially in today's environment where in enterprise software, where we've moved away from kind of growth at all costs to profitable growth. And that means that, you know, we expect and effectively need our sales reps to be meeting quota, because if we have a number of sales reps that are below quota, we're going to lack efficiency. We're not going to be hitting our financial targets. So that means that our reps need to be spending time on opportunities that have the highest likelihood of closing. And so you need to identify those red flags early. And if single threaded and we're unable to kind of break through and find other stakeholders in the organization, that may be an opportunity that we shouldn't be spending time on, because there's going to be a pipeline of opportunities and we need to identify those that have the highest probability, because we are focused on generating a profit and growing. And so we need to ensure that those resources are provided as much value as possible.
I'd love to unpack some of the themes that we talked about there already, Sam. There's a lot to cover. Just before we jump into, you know, some of these things around business cases, ROI, budgeting, you know, line item versus not, just help us understand the picture internally a little bit more. So, you know, you've given us a great definition of the role of a strategic CFO within the organization. What does your relationship typically look like with the rest of the C-suite, the rest of the exec team? You know, perhaps we'll start with the CEO and then we'll move around.
Yeah. So I work very closely with the CEO, really on all of our strategic objectives. Certainly, you know, the CEO looks to leverage my skill set and really just kind of my understanding of our financial objectives in terms of how they align with our strategic objectives. And certainly not necessarily as the owner of the budget, because I think everybody in our organization ultimately needs to have budget ownership. But in terms of how I work with the CEO, I think, you know, kind of as a sounding board, you know, CEOs are very often kind of blue sky, big thinker. And a lot of times those ideas come with a material cost that ultimately doesn't align with our financial objectives. So I think just being a good sounding board for the CEO to provide the data and the information that will help make good decisions and ultimately optimize that decision-making by leveraging our financial insights. The other person in our organization that I work very closely with is our CRO. So myself and our CRO are basically the two heads of our deal desk. And so any, you know, sales opportunity, and it being an enterprise software, it's pretty rare that you have kind of an off-the-shelf deal. We sell into very large organizations that have procurement teams, and procurement teams' objectives is to get the best deal possible and the best terms possible. And so oftentimes bringing in the CFO of the seller helps mitigate some of the power, so to speak, that those procurement groups have, because we can bring that data, we can help support the ROI, we can help support in terms of their, you know, budgetary concerns or how they want to structure a deal to get the results that they're seeking, whether that be how the opportunity or how the purchase of our solution impacts their P&L, how it may impact their balance sheet, and how we can work with them to ensure that they're meeting their objectives in terms of their budgets and things of that nature. So oftentimes bringing in financial leadership in a sales cycle often helps overcome some of those constraints that the procurement team may bring to the table. In terms of our product and engineering leadership, I work with them largely on ensuring that they're meeting their objectives in terms of their deliverables with our budget in mind. So we go into every year having a long planning exercise, determining what resources we need, and then we need to manage to those budgets. So oftentimes there's going to be turnover, or there's going to be needs that arise, and we determine that we need to make an investment in one area. How do we do that? You know, by ensuring that we remain on budget, but we meet our objectives. And no company is static. Things are always changing. And so again, just having those financial insights and understanding of how these things may impact our budget and ensuring that we're aligned on that spend. And just like the CEO and providing him with financial insights to make good strategic decisions, that oftentimes happens with our engineering group as well. You know, we're a private equity owned business. We have a very robust set of KPIs. Private equity investors, generally speaking, have a finance background. So they spend a lot of time on metrics, ask a lot of questions on metrics. engineers typically, or, you know, product and engineering leadership, generally speaking, isn't have a great depth of knowledge in terms of the overall picture of your organization. I'll give you an example. Yesterday, I was working with our senior VP of engineering. He was asking questions by one of our operating partners in terms of our engineering spend versus our revenue growth. And so I was able to provide him kind of a picture over the last 5 years in terms of kind of showing how those two things align. Because if you're just looking at one static period, you may have a conclusion that isn't necessarily accurate and you need a bigger picture. And so in that situation, you know, I was able to provide him with that bigger picture to help support his case in terms of why we were spending and investing in certain areas and the results that was having in terms of our, you know, outcomes.
Super fascinating. I think that's such a good overview. The one that I quite often hear come up time and again from salespeople is also the CFO and COO relationship. I mean, you know, quite often we'll see that the understanding initially is that, oh no, it's the COO's budget, but then actually, the COO will pull in and kind of confer with CFO really late on in a sales process. What does your relationship typically look like between CFO and COO?
So in my organization, we don't have a COO. Oftentimes, I kind of view myself as the CFO/COO, although I don't carry that title. But in terms of how I work with the CRO and our relationship with the CEO and kind of those three individuals within the organization, I think we kind of formed the office to the COO between the three of us. And so I think, you know, my role is somewhat quasi CFO, COO, just based on my relationship with the sales organization.
How does that differ, you know, in any of your past experiences? Have you worked closely with a COO, and how do you see that dynamic typically play out?
In my other roles, the COO has also run the sales organization. And so frankly, I wouldn't think it wasn't terribly different than it is like at Service Power. So oftentimes COOs, you know, sit over the sales organization, maybe the professional services group, and very often have, you know, purview and oversight over the revenue side of the house. So frankly speaking, it's not terribly different than it is today. I think COOs, generally speaking, are going to be in larger organizations where you have a larger executive team and kind of lieutenants underneath the C-suite. So you could have a COO and they have like a VP of sales, and then the VP of sales runs the sales team. So in our case, we have a CRO who runs the sales group. He also runs our business development group, as well as our customer success organization. So I think largely speaking, it oftentimes just depends on the size of the organization and ultimately how you structure it. But in terms of the day-to-day, we certainly have the COO role, but it's just managed by three different executives that don't necessarily carry that title.
Really interesting. Sam, let's talk about budgets. You mentioned something really interesting where you said you think it's important that everyone has an element of budget ownership across the leadership team. I'm aware that budgeting processes can look quite different from company to company. How do you think about budget ownership across the leadership team? And you know, there's probably a lot of salespeople thinking, well, if the budget owner is involved, then why do I still need to go to a CFO and bring him or she on this journey?
Yeah. Well, because like I said earlier, not everything happens in a vacuum. It's not necessarily static, right? And so there may not necessarily be changes in the budget, so to speak, in terms of what our EBITDA goals are or what our revenue goals are, but we may get there through kind of a different path or a different journey along the way. Budget ownership, I think, is super important because if you don't own it, then you may not always be accountable to it. And so when we go through the budgeting process, the CFO and the CFO's team is generally speaking the one that's developing the budget. But that budget needs to have the input and the ownership of the different individuals within the organization. Generally speaking, that's going to be the C-suite. Obviously, they're getting input from their teams. And so there's always kind of the balancing act of the CFO understanding and having objectives that are very often driven by the shareholders, or in our case, our private equity sponsor, in terms of we need to transition away from growth at all costs to profitable growth. And how do we get there? And so when you make that transition, which for us, we really made that transition this year in 2023. And so the process looked a bit different from a budgeting perspective in terms of we just cannot necessarily add all of the headcount that you're asking for because we have a goal in mind in terms of where we need to be from a profitability perspective in 2023 through 2026. And so that process was a little bit more challenging than in prior years because it was more of a negotiation. And what you need to avoid avoid is those stakeholders in other parts of the organization walking away from that process with the feeling that that's not my budget. That budget was effectively given to me. And so it's a process of alignment and negotiation and ensuring that when all is said and done, that individual and their leadership capacity really feels ownership of that budget and accountability to that budget so that when it comes time to make decisions as it relates to the budget, that they're supportive of it and they ultimately own it and take accountability for it.
Got it. That's really clear. And if we kind of bring a hypothetical example to mind, so, you know, let's say your CRO, you've gone through that process, you've built out a budget plan for the year, which I assume will consist of a headcount plan, perhaps some things around tooling and training. There's an amount that's being pre-approved or agreed by, you know, with yourself and the business. Talk us through the difference between budget that's approved versus budget, you know, just isn't a line item. What does the process look like between those two instances?
I mean, honestly, it kind of depends on timing during the year and how the business is performing. So there's going to be budget that's approved for the early part of the year. And that budget, generally speaking, is going to be available and it's just going to proceed according to the budget and according to the plan. There still will generally sign off kind of along the way, even on budget items that were part of the budget that were approved. And it goes back to ensuring that we're going to meet our financial objectives. And so as an organization that is seeking to grow every year, meeting those growth objectives throughout the year is part of the budget. And so if you're achieving your growth objectives, the budget that you had approved will be the budget that's available. If you're slightly behind at your growth objectives, both in terms of like a permanent difference or a timing difference, then things are just going to have to shift. And so, you know, from my perspective as the CFO, all budget line items are contingent upon meeting other objectives. And so when you get halfway through the year, you have to reassess where you are relative to all of the objectives within the organization to determine whether or not those budget items from a spend perspective and from a from the CRO's perspective, meeting your growth objectives, your sales objectives. So an example would be, you know, you're expanding into Europe. And in order to trigger headcount or selling resources, the field resources, the feet on the street that carry a quota, from my perspective, you hire to pipeline. And so, you know, from a budgetary perspective, using the example again of like expanding into Europe, you would start with your marketing budget. You would start with your business development resource to build that pipeline. And so if you get to the point in the year, let's say you had a hire date of 7-1 in your budget for your quota carrying rep, prior to that, 30 days prior to that, you would have to do an objective analysis of the success you've had from those earlier investments in terms of the marketing, generating pipeline, the business development, and determining whether or not this is the right time to hire that resource. Because the last thing you want to do is put some feet on the street when there's no pipeline for them to go work and to close opportunities. So perhaps you need to take a step back and continue to invest in your marketing efforts and your business development efforts in order for it to be the appropriate time to invest in that resource. Because it's also an expensive thing to hire people, to train somebody. And I think, you know, with sales reps, if they're not hitting their number, A, the company is going to look at that and make an assessment on that rep's performance relative to their quota. But at the same time, sales reps want to make money. And if they join a company and they don't have the pipeline, they're not going to stick around very long. And that's not going to be a good investment for the sales rep or for the company.
Super insightful. There's some absolute gold dust coming out today, Sam. Really enjoying this discussion. And on that point around, and what I've taken from you there is almost like the difference might not actually be that big, because even if something has been budgeted for, it's still dependent on performance. So ultimately it depends on business performance as to whether that budget gets released or approved for spend throughout the year. In terms of types of spend then, you mentioned things there around productivity and training reps so they get up to speed so they are where you need them to be. How do you view different types of spend? They're things which you would kind of look at with more scrutiny versus others?
Yeah. I mean, just like any buying decision, it's return on investment, right? And there's certain roles that's more measurable than others. Sales is certainly one that's very measurable. And so, you know, reps come in after the ramp period, they carry a quota. And there's also a lot of other metrics that we frankly track, which is, you know, the number of meetings they're taking, the number of demos that they're scheduling along with their BDR, the number of meetings that they do in person. We feel that it's very important that you're pounding the flesh, so to speak, that you're getting in front of people. So we even look at what expense reports look like. Are you on the road? Are you getting in front of people? If a rep is staying at home and not getting on the road and getting in front of people, frankly, for us, that's a red flag, because you know we believe that it really helps move a sales cycle along when you develop personal rapport with a buyer. And that's hard to do over the phone. You can create a lot of value in a relationship by sitting down with a meal with somebody you're meeting them face to face.
I guess this is the classic kind of chicken and egg scenario as well, right? Because in some regards, if performance hasn't been where it needs to be for the business in the first half of the year, if a leader is coming to yourself or the CFO and asking for, you know, budget to do something differently, to turn it around, well, you can't have the budget if you aren't hitting your goals. But how do you hit your goals if you keep on doing the same thing? How do you think about that chicken and egg scenario?
Yeah, I mean, it's a good question. I think, you know, with sales, the way you measure that is in pipeline. Are the opportunities there to execute on? And if they're not, then maybe the right investment is not necessarily in the individual that takes a warm lead and closes it. Maybe the right area to invest in is developing that pipeline. So that could be in sales development role, that could be in marketing. But I mean, it's a good question, because, you know, similar to having ownership in the budget and taking accountability for that, when somebody's looking for a resource, when a leader is looking for a resource or for spend, the question always is kind of like, what is the ROI or what is the benefit of that? How is that going to ensure that we're meeting our objectives? So that's very often a discussion that we're having. And, you know, one thing that you're seeing, like, and transitioning from growth at all costs to profitable growth, is if you have attrition, if somebody leaves the organization, historically, it would just be, okay, backfill that role, right? Now we're kind of taking a step back and saying, do we need to backfill that role? What is the value that that role creates? What is the near term, medium term, and long term value that we're going to get from backfilling that role? And does that exceed taking that budget and maybe putting it somewhere else, right? So using the European expansion example again, let's say an engineer that on one of your products that is kind of in a maintenance mode, it's a mature product, you don't necessarily need to be constantly releasing new feature and functionality. Maybe that spend is better put into your sales development resources in Europe for that expansion, because the near-term benefit that that creates outweighs having another resource on a product that doesn't require a significant amount of development efforts. So it's always a balancing act, right? Like a discussion that I often have with the other leaders is budget is fungible. At the end of the day, EBITDA is one of our targets, revenue is one of our targets, and in between that, there's spend. And where we spend that, you know, ultimately can be moved around so long as we meet our EBITDA objectives and our growth objectives. And so it's always kind of that balancing act of how do we manage the resources that we have to meet the objectives that we have for our stakeholders. And so whether we spend it on engineering or whether we spend it on sales and marketing, at the end of the day, the goal is to meet our objectives. And so wherever we put those dollars needs to have the results in terms of top or bottom line, and it's fungible.
That's super interesting. You've spoken quite a lot on the show today, Sam, around efficient growth. We're hearing a lot in the industry, you know, around how AI potentially a massive opportunity to help us make the organizations we work in more efficient. Headcount, conversely, is, you know, typically our biggest expense. So how are you thinking about that as a CFO? You know, if one of the leaders in your organization comes to you and with a business case for a technology that can help improve efficiency that isn't, you know, like a headcount investment, are you looking at that perhaps more favorably than you may have done previously?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, if you can leverage technology to generate results that are similar or better than a human could do, I'm all for that. Technology isn't late for work. Technology always shows up. Technology doesn't have attrition risk. So, you know, frankly speaking, if you can leverage technology, then I think it's going to be beneficial both for the organization in terms of, you know, the financial benefit, but I think it could also just improve, you know, the business overall from an efficiency perspective. At the end of the day, oftentimes when you invest in technology, it may impact certain roles, but it's going to create other opportunities in the organization. And hopefully those opportunities are because of growth and freed up budget that you can put elsewhere. And so I think the long-term benefits of investing in technology and in AI are incredible, and something that every organization should be looking at to leverage.
It's amazing perspectives. We got 2 minutes left, Sam. The community will be furious at me if I don't finally, you know, ask one more question around business case. You know, we spoke about the importance of ROI in your decision-making process. What advice would you have for the sales community in terms of what a good business case looks like, and what are you looking for?
So I think in today's environment, quick wins or for ROI that is measurable in a period of months, not years, is going to be one that resonates. One of the biggest challenges that we run into when we're working with prospects to get a deal across the finish line is the time to value. Enterprise software is not something that comes off the shelf and you implement it in a matter of weeks. It's typically a matter of months. And so, you know, you need to balance how you're structuring opportunities, both in terms of when ultimately the software is paid for, when the subscription period starts, those sorts of things, so that the prospect, when they're doing their ROI, there isn't a long period of earn, so to speak, or, you know, red ink in terms of their impact that that investment has. You know, in enterprise software, the large organizations, the sales forces of the world, when you sign a contract, you get a bill the next day and the clock has started and you're incurring expenses. And that gives CFOs heartburn. And it's one thing that we come up against very frequently is I'm paying for something that I'm not getting benefit out of. And there's all of the traditional responses to that in terms of enterprise software, and that I'm sure most sales professionals have down pat in terms of what the response is to that. But I think in today's environment, you need to be flexible, right? Because for us, long-term value is driven off of recurring revenue and customer growth, not necessarily the immediate dollar tomorrow. It's going to be important for CFOs and for sales teams to align on how do we structure opportunities, the commercial arrangements, so that you're shortening time to value as much as possible, so that the ROI is achieved, like I said, in a matter of months and not years. And oftentimes that just means that maybe you're going to have to delay the benefit to your organization in the short term to give long-term value to your company and ultimately create that ROI for the buyer sooner. The ROI will occur sooner because there'll be less time between a buying decision and when they start to generate value from your solution.
It's amazing insight, Sam, and what an incredible episode this has been. Sam, I want to make sure that I give you the opportunity, you know, for any of our listeners today that would like to learn more about yourself, your background and mentorship, and also Service Power, where are the best places for them to do that?
Yeah, I mean, Service Power, www.servicepower.com. We just completed a refresh of our website, so go check it out. I could be reached on LinkedIn and, you know, work with several other companies, either as an advisor or a board member. And so if those, any of those opportunities are out there, would be happy to engage on things like that. And if anybody's looking for somebody to speak to that may be junior in a finance organization or in a SaaS company in general, feel free to reach out.
Amazing. Sam, really appreciate the time. It's been awesome having you on the show. Thanks. A great episode.
Thanks, Matt. Appreciate the time.
Awesome.
By uncovering blind spots in performance, motivation, and skills, UHubs helps busy sales leaders at top SaaS companies to optimize their sales enablement so they can develop their reps and grow revenue. The UHubs Pulse platform visualizes each team's development needs, personalized upskilling, and provides data-driven coaching recommendations. These save sales managers 40 plus hours per quarter and help reps to ramp up 30% faster. Supercharge your sales team by booking a demo today.